Sexton trying to get loose. He'll fire.
He knocks it down.
Vaccaro slammed it home. Garland upstairs.
Oh!
Sexton inside. Oh. A thunderous dunk.
And Allen blocked the shot at the rim.
Welcome to the Chase Down Podcast, part of the Cavs Media family. I'm your host, Justin Rowan. The Cleveland Cavaliers are 8-2 since Evan Mobley has returned to the lineup. Isaac Okoro playing so much better, broke out of his slump. He's killing it. Kevin Love looking like vintage Minnesota Kevin Love. We got so much to talk about, but before we get into that, support for this podcast and the following message comes from Zoom. 500,000 businesses connect using Zoom, a single platform for phone, chat, workspaces, events, apps, and video. Zoom enables real-time collaboration for teams around the globe. Zoom, how the world connects. And connecting with me now, a laboring Carter Rodriguez. How you doing, buddy?
I got my booster yesterday, man, and I am, I got it yesterday afternoon, went to bed feeling good, thought I was home scot-free, woke up today achy as could be.
I am feeling for you, man, because Trish got hers on Friday and I was caring for her the majority of the weekend. So you soldiering through this is greatly appreciated.
I really hope it's not a multi-day thing. I'm going to Raleigh tomorrow.
Well, the good news is she was mostly okay the second day. A little bit of brain fog, but you know what? Still a little achy, breaky.
It's probably, probably about where my brain is normally. So we'll call it a break even.
You know what? That's fair. Last time we did the podcast, it was early morning. I was gross. My brain wasn't working. So now this is my turn to
have... A lot of people really liked the early morning pod, I feel. We got a lot of like, oh, these guys are real, you know? they're not filtering anything. They're just dumb idiots who just woke up. And I think that was the truest version of us that our loyal listeners got to see.
Every now and then you got to peel back the curtain, right? Let people know that we're all not always these polished professionals, you know, podcasting out of our home offices.
First word to describe us is polished.
You know what, Carter, though? It was a really great sports weekend for me. I'm feeling great.
Congratulations, buddy.
I had Monday off, so I got to witness 3 Cavs wins over the weekend, as well as my 3rd championship as a fan. Once again, a player named Kyrie sealing a championship for a team that I care about. So that
was
a lot
of fun. One of the wildest interceptions you'll ever see.
Oh, a three-tip interception in overtime.
A diving scoop into the air to push the ball back into the waiting hands of the defender to seal the championship win in overtime.
Thank you, Cincinnati Bengals, for cutting Winston Rose. He spent the last year and a half there after winning the Grey Cup in 2019, came back for the championship run, and scooped it back up in the air for Kyrie Wilson to pick it off. And
I won't lie to you, I don't know how the scoring works. It was very overwhelming. I watched to be a good friend, but there were a few times where I forgot about the no fourth down thing. What are they doing?
It's a game changer. There was some questionable decision making in there, but you know what? We're not here talking about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. No one cares about the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. What they care about is the Cleveland Cavaliers earning a tiebreaker over the Miami Heat. I said it on the last podcast.
Because we're in a world where that matters, which is crazy.
It really does matter. Like when you look at the situation this season, the Cavs are going to be fighting for home court. It's a really tight race in the Eastern Conference. And I said it before during the last podcast, and I said it before the game as well. I felt like that was going to be a tougher game than a lot of people were giving it credit for. Miami had beat Milwaukee with their big three, first loss of the season for Milwaukee with all three of those guys in the lineup. And the other factor too, which I didn't mention on the podcast, is Eric Spoelstra getting a second look at this Cleveland Cavaliers team. Like, you still had a lot of veterans on Miami. They obviously remember how the last game went, and you could tell they were doing things to try to anticipate what the Cavs are doing. They were playing more physical. There's almost a little bit of 2015 Cavs Warriors in the way that they were bumping Garland on every screen and trying to wear the Cavs down physically. And I thought the Cavs did a really good job overall responding to that intensity.
Yeah, I thought it was a fun game. Like, you know, just from the perspective of it kind of wasn't that well played by the Cavs. Mm-hmm. You know, like, I don't think that, you know, this one's going in there, you know, going 5 of 16 from the field is going into Darius's, you know, personal favorites he's ever played. Laurie had a really rough game from the field. Again, just kind of just okay. I thought Jared Allen had a good game, but, you know, only got six shots up, which I, you know, we always say is kind of a precursor or an indicator for how good the offense is humming based on how much, how in the action he is. So his six attempts, while, you know, efficient, went 6 of 6 and then 5 of 5 from the line, like, you know, one of those games for him. And then Evan Mobley looked like a real rookie out there. Mm-hmm. I think a bad game, one of his very rare bad games. And yet they won anyway. And they won relatively decisively because of the way that this team can win, can kill you in 10 different ways.
Yeah, and you didn't mention it, but Jetty Osman having a rough first shift and not getting beyond 6 minutes, right? Lamar Stevens stepped up in a way that was meaningful. Isaac Okoro, as I mentioned, having yet another great game. I think we should give him a shout-out here over this winning streak. He's averaging 15.8 points, shooting 46.7% from three on four attempts a night. I mean, obviously you don't expect him to do that, because if he does that the rest of the season and shoots 47% from three, we are going to have to shift our expectations once again. But I think this is another example.
Yeah, I would say we would categorize that one as unlikely.
We would also categorize that as bananas. You know what? This entire season has been a fever dream, and even me, even crazy me, is not allowing myself to believe that that's possible. But I think it is an example, though, of what we've seen throughout this development period for the Cavs, which is hardworking players that are bought in, that are sacrificing, given enough time and given enough reps, are going to become more comfortable. They're going to figure out exactly what they do well, how they can complement the rest of the roster. And I think a lot of credit needs to go to Okoro, like recognizing, okay, I'm going to create opportunities for myself in transition. Now that we're a little healthier, I'm going to cut. They're cheating. They're playing a big ball denial defense in Miami. I'm going to cut off ball. I'm going to try to be active and create things in those ways. Obviously, the three-point shooting helps, but I like his overall game. I like what he's been bringing to the table lately.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard not to be thrilled with it, you know, especially given how dire the start of the season was. I think there was a lot of legitimate concerns. You know, it looked like a guy who was, and this happens, by the way, you know, like we like to mostly talk about fun stuff on this podcast, but there are rookies who have pretty good rookie years and, you know, okay, you know, some warts, and then those warts actually get exacerbated.
Yeah.
Going into year two, and they stopped being useful, you know, like, and like there was, you know, if you were an angsty lad, as I can be at times, you know, you can start, oh no, has the offense really regressed? Is he just hurt? I don't know. And you needed to see a three game stretch where he scores 16, 20 and 18 efficiently while putting up threes and keeping the defense honest. Yeah. You needed to see it. I think it's really, really important. He probably
needed it for his own confidence too. Like, you could tell it was getting to him a little bit.
Yeah, I would say so. So like, you want to see these guys kind of battle through their problems. And we talked about this, and a few people outside of us have talked about it, how, you know, one of the advantages to how thin the Cavs are on the wing right now is JB doesn't really have a lot of options. Like, you know, like, he can't just bench Isaac till he feels safe with him again. Like, Isaac has to play through this stuff. And to some extent, like, I think that's a good thing, especially given the fact that it hasn't killed the team. So like, you're looking at what is happening. They're surviving with him out there when he was not playing well.
Yeah.
And now that he is playing well, the results are kind of self-evident. They're knocking the crap out of everybody. Yeah. I think my daughter just flung open my door. Hi, Millie.
Millie making a podcast appearance. You love to see it. Hopefully she doesn't charge for that.
Did you see how the pace at which that door just flew open? This girl is a future lineman. I'll tell you what. She can push the pile.
It reminds me of that news video at the start of the pandemic where the kids broke in to the office while the guy was on the middle of a call.
So good. But I don't know, man. Like, it just feels like the fact that they've survived when he was not playing well, it just feels like they have so much margin for error, which is crazy. Because there's nothing I would say about this team the last couple of years where I felt like they had no margin for error.
Yeah, I agree. And I would anticipate, as he gets more comfortable and as this season continues to progress and these guys grow and learn how to play with one another, we'll see more wrinkles. I thought actually a really smart one was brought up on today's Dunker Spot podcast with Nikias Duncan and Steve Jones Jr.
If you guys don't listen to that podcast, man, it is so good.
Absolutely. And they started off today's podcast talking about the Cavs, talking about just everything that they like about them, which is basically how a lot of the stuff we've been talking about, like that this does seem like sustainable success, that these pieces work together so well. The defense has been great. You're seeing some innovation and creativity from J.B. Bickerstaff on both ends of the floor. But I thought Steve made a really good point about not always having Isaac on the weak side when they're running action, keeping him on the strong side, because inevitably his man is still cheating over and that's impacting the ability to run stuff with Darius Garland. So having him on the strong side a little more, if his man cheats off him there, that's a quick pass for him to drive baseline. And then you have maybe Lauri Markkanen on the weak side corner to kind of keep the defense a little more honest and generate spacing. And I would expect to see more wrinkles as the season progresses. But I thought that was a really smart observation, especially when you are playing against a team that is playing an aggressive ball denial defense like Miami did.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense, though. With that said, I think diversity, this offense still just could use as much diversity as possible, putting guys in different spots. I do like that JB has reduced Isaac's shot profile to corner threes. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're going to take a shot from outside the arc, it's going to be one of the corners. It's easiest to do on the weak side, and he's showing a little bit of signs of life there.
Yeah.
Still all wide, wide open, but not bricking them like he was earlier in the year. The other thing that Lauri in the weak side that can do, though, is, and this actually worked, is you can run him off flare screens. And mm-hmm. I think that's one of the reasons why I think Steve Jones is really right in making that suggestion. In fact, the Cavaliers got a wide open lob for Evan Mobley, basically with a fake flare screen to Lauri on the weak side, where Lauri went to curl around. Evan's man kind of had to go challenge him, but they slipped it and Evan got a wide open dunk. So having your best shooters on the weak side does have a ton of value. And I thought it was it was a really smart point from the fellas at the Dunker Spot I just can't recommend enough.
Yeah, absolutely. And I do think that the Cavs overall, you're going to be a little more susceptible to teams that play that kind of a defense when you don't have a secondary playmaker. It was actually kind of counterintuitive. I figured that in the minutes where Garland and Rubio were out together, they probably did a little bit better offensively against that lineup. That was not the case. Obviously, noisy when it's a single game sample size, but the O rating was basically 60 when it was Garland and Rubio in 16 minutes and 120 when it was Garland his 20 minutes without Rubio last night. So I thought overall, though, they responded really well. And obviously the biggest contributing factor was Kevin Love going off for 23 points in the second half. I know we've discussed it before, but I just can't say enough good things about how Kevin Love has played this season, the way that he's embraced a reduced role coming off of a tough year where he just wasn't able to get on the court, wasn't even able to get on the court physically and look right for Team USA either. And for him to come out, embrace this role, understanding that, hey, when I'm playing really well, I'm going to create more opportunities for myself. And when I'm not, I'm going to be that veteran presence. I'm going to be in the ear of Evan Mobley all the time. I'm going to be giving guidance to Darius Garland and Isaac Okoro. I just don't think you can I don't think you can overstate just how impactful that is for a team like this when you have so many young players in the starting lineup and then you have veterans at multiple positions giving advice on with that second unit.
Yeah, and just I thought Kevin Love and Ricky Rubio won them the game. Mm-hmm. I know Isaac had a great game. I know Jarrett had a great game. But I just thought the steadying presence of those two guys, like I think the Cavs were just a little bit flustered with the way that Miami was defending them. I think they look tired, like they can't kind of fresh legs their way out of this one.
Yep.
And I thought the way that Kevin and Ricky just like calmly and coolly expanded that lead, you know, and obviously, you know, no 20 point quarter or whatever the hell he had, which was bananas, is going to be quiet, but it was very methodical.
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest difference that the Cavs have. compared to any of these other teams. You know, they have guys like Jordan Clarkson who are like the microwaves, the individual guys that kind of like can get buckets and bursts. But the thing that's so cool about the second unit on the Cavs is they're the ones who just like reinsert rhythm and flow into the team when they've lost it. I think that's really what JB does, uses them for. Like if Lamar Stevens is his, hey, we're not playing hard enough sub, Ricky and Kevin are his, hey, let's just get back to playing the kind of basketball we wanted to play sub. Yeah. And I think that was what's so cool about this team, because you don't normally see it like this. This is a really unique situation where team's good and they're starting all their kids. And they're very talented vets who probably could start in a lot of situations, are relegated to the bench because of the upside of the kids and because things are going so well. So they just get to like beat the crap out of these second units. They're just less talented. They're just frankly less talented.
Yeah. And again, it's mind boggling that the kids are as good as they are. I tweeted this out last night, but I think it needs to be pointed out that when Garland is on the court, the Cavs offense improves by a team best 11.2 points per 100 possessions. With Mobley on the court, the Cavs defense improves by a team best 10.8 points per 100 possessions. And in 618 minutes together, those two have a plus 9.6 net rating, and they're 21 and 20 years old, respectively. Like, that is nuts. That is
the straws that stir the drinks. I don't think the expression works for plurality, but either way, I mean, really, you're right. One unlocks the offense, one unlocks the defense, and together they kick the crap out of everybody.
Yeah. And you have Jared Allen, who I think it's really important that, like, he's making such a contribution offensively, and that gets a lot of credit. I think he's playing really good defense.
He's the ultimate glue guy, you know, like he is the one who like who fills all the gaps for them on both sides of the ball, cleans up so many plays. I mean, you know, what's so fun about, I've noticed this with the guards lately, that they actually don't even care about over penetrating and putting up a bad shot if they've gotten the big to come contest them.
Yeah.
They just know Jared and Evan are going to clean it up.
Yep.
Like, they're like, it's not quite Kobe assists, but it is pretty much that. Like, they're like, yeah, I'm probably not going to make this, but they have no one to get the board. And it's a strategy that really pays dividends for them.
Yeah. And I think the other factor too is just the physical toll that playing center takes on the body, like having Jared Allen to absorb a lot of those minutes and to,
God, can you imagine if Evan had to play full-time center all year?
I don't think he would have the energy to be banging into guys on the offensive end, right? Like,
did you see the news with our dear Evan?
What's that?
He's questionable for tomorrow. He's got a sore hip, per Jonathan Fagan, who is the first person I see tweet about it. Well, he's a beat reporter for the Rockets.
Little disappointing. Houston Rockets have been playing better lately. They've won a lot of games since Jalen Green's been out. They beat Atlanta in Atlanta without Jalen Green and Kevin Porter Jr. So, again, there aren't a lot of off nights, even some of the worst teams in the league. They lose a couple of their promising young players, but they got really good veterans that come in and know how to play and will test teams if you have an off night. So, hopefully Evan's able to play. But yeah, I do think overall having Jared Allen to absorb that physical toll is important, because even guys that are more physically developed, like Anthony Davis has talked about this season, playing a lot of his minutes at center, it's taking a toll on him. That was one of the things that he hated in his last name in New Orleans, his last year in New Orleans, pardon me. Like, that kind of stuff really, really matters. And I think that's one of the things that makes this pairing so promising. You would expect both of them to add some functional strength as they continue to get older. But I do think having Jared Allen to do that, it is part of what makes that pairing so alluring as you look at the future.
Yeah. And especially, like, I mean, have you noticed Jared's much better as a post defender than he used to be?
Yeah.
That used to kind of be the rap on him, is, okay, he can block some shots. Okay, he's a pretty good help defender. But, like, people who are strong can put him under the basket.
Yep.
And we haven't seen him against an Embiid yet. We have seen him against Jokic, who I think he did pretty good against. You know, obviously Jokic is insane. So it's like, you know, Jokic puts Rudy Gobert into the basket, and he's like one of the best post defenders in basketball. There are people who are just unguardable. But, like, for the most part, like, guys like Vucevic, I was like, yeah, go ahead and post him. I don't care. It's a lot of fun to see.
Yeah, and I know his rebounding rate hasn't really shifted a whole lot from last season, but he is playing alongside two other seven-footers now, right? Like, I feel like he's doing a better job securing those contested rebounds. And again, it's one of the things that you pointed to last year where it might not be all of a sudden he's shooting seven threes a game. That might not be what his, like, growth looks like. But it's these improvements in the margins. It's physical maturity. It's better understanding of the game, passing out of the short roll, all that kind of stuff is what makes me think that this season assuming the Cavs stay in this position, I think he's a lock to be an all-star, in my opinion. I think he absolutely deserves it. I think Darius deserves to be there as well. You can make a case for Mobley. I think he at least deserves to be in the conversation. So it's a really great position to be in. And you know what? It's starting to get some national attention too, Carter. You were saying you were hoping
give
that this run...
Give me the low post, Colin. I got a low post podcast instead. I'll settle. Yeah, it was great. It's fun. I we're seeing it all over the place. We just mentioned the dunker spot. We mentioned Lowe having Brian Windhorst on, and really seems to believe in this team in a way that has kind of caught me off guard. I was expecting a little more skepticism. I think he just likes this team, and like you kind of heard that from him. He's like, I'm looking for red flags, and there just aren't that many.
Right. I actually thought Lowe and Windy did a really good job kind of breaking down the Cavs situation there. And one of the things that they hit on, which made me feel good because it's something that we've been saying, and I like it when smart people say the same thing as us because, one, I'm vain and selfish and all that sort of thing. But also, it just lets me know that, hey, maybe we're on the right track. And to me, that is, hey, I would be cautious of writing off Colin Sexton as a result of this. I mean, it's funny to look at it because I think you can make arguments one way or another. You can look at data points and argue one way or another. The Cavs were 7-4 with Sexton. They are 10-8 without him. You don't exactly hear a lot of people saying that the Grizzlies are better without Ja Morant after going 8-1 without him. Because you know what? People will argue in varying degrees of bad faith, depending on what their preconceived notions of players are.
Yeah, and I don't know how much of it's bad faith as much as, like, you know, there is a degree of, like, if you have a belief system that the backup, you know, the small backcourt isn't going to work long term, you are looking for evidence.
Yeah, you're looking for data points that something else can work well.
Yeah, and I think that they have found some of that evidence. Again, I was actually surprised to hear Wendy actually confirm that he doesn't think that either, that he thinks that the small backcourt is never going to last. I'm like, I just don't know if I buy that given how well they were defending before Sexton went down. Like, they were already playing really good defense. And while the Okoro thing is crazy, it's not like Markkanen does that much. And I thought Sexton, it's like you're kind of swapping out Markkanen for Sexton, you know, in a lot of ways. And like, it's Markkanen is taller. He can help kind of rim protect a little bit on those weird switches. But Sexton can get over ball screens and blow up actions at the point of attack when he's really locked in. So, like, I'm just surprised that seems to be still consensus wisdom when we were seeing evidence that suggests otherwise, that this is kind of the perfect paradigm for the small backcourt to work.
Yeah, and frankly, like, I don't even really have an opinion on who should be the starter and whatnot. What I am developing an opinion on, and friend of the podcast, our former boss, David Zavac, asked me this question, which was, can you really have it both ways, where you are taking this team seriously as a contender, but you also consider this to be a found money season, and therefore, you know, let's not get aggressive on the trade market. And one of the things that they mentioned on the low post is being careful, like, if you were to sell low on Sexton this year. And I think that extends to Isaac Okoro as well, where you have a situation where, yeah, you have these three young guys that work really well together. I would be really, really cautious to move on from any of these other guys, like Okoro or Sexton, who's
young. I'm cautious
young.
To move on from anyone. You know, it's funny. If you're a listener of this podcast, you might think Justin is all sunshine and rainbows, but behind the scenes, he's disloyal. He is the trade packages this man will put together on the trade machine. And I'm just like good vibes, man. I can't, you know, I'm all jokes aside, obviously we know you love your boys, but like,
Thanks for the clarification, Carter.
Yes, obviously. I think it would be clear that I'm not actually airing you out on our podcast. But like, you know, it's funny, like even when you send like pretty reasonable ideas that involve anyone in the rotation, I'm just like, it just feels so good right now. Like, I just want to chase that feeling with this team right now. And like, obviously, if a no-doubter trade comes across your table, or you can get into a deal and pick up a really good asset and it's worth it. Obviously, Kobe, I think Kobe is smart enough to kind of make that decision. Like, I mean, we literally saw him do it where things weren't going this well.
Yeah.
But last year, we saw the team doing better than we thought, and he still picked up Jared Allen and said, like, hey, you know, this might be hard in the locker room, but I'm not letting a talent like this go. So I think that does tell you that Kobe will make those kind of decisions. But like, I'm just not seeking him out right now, man. Like, all I want is to trade some seconds and maybe some low end salary to go pick up like Torrey Craig, Justin Holiday, you know, like some. I want the Cavs to feel good enough about their ninth man to stop playing an 8-man rotation and no more.
Yeah. And David, when he mentioned that to me, basically saying, can you have it both ways? My gut instinct was, I want to kind of ride out this season. I want to, like, Okoro to get these reps, even if it costs the team a win or two. I want to see him develop. I want to give him this opportunity, because when you have Sexton and Okoro in particular, I think you have a lot of future upside there, because you have guys that are really hardworking, that get along with the rest of the guys in the core, that have already shown a willingness to change their game and sacrifice. We don't know, like, if Okoro blows up the rest of the season and he plays great and it works really well, you might have to go into a situation where Sexton might come off the bench. We have seen Ricky Rubio come off the bench and basically play starters minutes. When you're playing an 8-man rotation where everyone's playing 26 minutes, it's not like anyone is getting a raw deal there, right? Like, if you play well, you earn minutes. And like, I would caution people. Like, I understand the dynamic has obviously changed with him being out. Garland has taken a new role, and you were going to want to keep him in that role. He's playing really well. Evan Mobley and Jared Allen, obvious focal points on both ends of the floor. But Sexton's a guy that came into the NBA not a three-point shooter. He was a mid-range guy that might be able to score a little bit in the pick and roll. Not a great passer. He was supposed to be a very good defender. And then throughout his rookie year, turned into a good three-point shooter. Then he developed an off-ball game. Then he developed his passing, right? Like, and then this season, he was playing good defense, playing even more off ball, like really sacrificing in a lot of ways. I really want to see what this team looks like with all of their young guys next year, because I just, at the very least, I think you have to be aggressive in looking to see what options are available in the market, because you don't want to miss an opportunity. But the way I feel, like, when it comes to the Cavs, let's say top eight, so Rubio, Love, and Jetty making up the rest of the top eight this year, as well as Colin Sexton, I would really put a premium on the chemistry that the Cavs have right now. Like, I wouldn't swap like dollar for dollar. This seems like a fair trade. I think it would need to be something that's really in their favor to move on from someone within there, because I do think that there's a real value to this. Part of the Cavs social team here, Madison Curley, shared a video yesterday of Love during a break in action talking to Evan Mobley, like instructing him, and she pointed out, like, Mobley has credited Love as being that number one vet for him, that's always been in his ear, that's giving him a lot of support, a lot of feedback. Rubio's obviously paid huge dividends for Garland and the rest of the young guys. Like, I really do think that,
apropos of nothing, Tony Brown in the chat just said, thoughts on that article from Bleacher Report suggesting a Russell Westbrook for Kevin Love Ricky Rubio deal?
No. I can't think of a more disruptive player. that would not be the most attractive thing in the world. So, like, I
read it just to get a reaction out of you. I'm sorry.
And you know what? The viewers on YouTube will get to enjoy that reaction. But I'm mostly with you. Like, I think if you can add to the rotation a little bit, because let's look at the reality of the situation. A lot of guys are testing positive for COVID right now. You are going to miss guys. You want to reduce the load on the bodies. You have to have some depth. I would be open to that. But breaking up the core, like I really do think that there's a value in kind of riding out the rest of the season, unless it's something that so obviously tips the scales both now and in the future that you just kind of have to do it.
Yeah, I just think the reality is, like, even if you were someone who wanted to move on from this team right now and start messing up that core and shaking it up and trying to go, you know, big game hunting with talent, I feel like that ship just kind of sailed the second Sexton got hurt, you know? Like, it's hard to do a 2-for-1 or a 3-for-1, even if you're not involving Sexton, if you don't have that extra body you can really count on, you know?
Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I just don't see it happening. I would much rather see them make moves at the margins and just get a little bit better and a little bit more secure when players are hurt and no more.
Yeah, and I think you really have to factor the personality component into this as well. Like, even if you're talking about someone like Cam Reddish, who makes under $5 million a year, that would be really easy to make the money work, and maybe it's a draft capital type thing. To me, I'd be a little cautious because Atlanta's had Bogey hurt. They've had Hunter be hurt. They need Cam Reddish, and they are not really willing to pay him. The three-point shooting, like, he's 32% for his career, can't finish within the arc. If people have issues with Colin Sexton's 4.5 assists a game, they're not going to love Cam's, like, 0.9. I think introducing a larger personality or someone that you don't have confidence is going to fit within the locker room is something you have to factor in too. Like, I think that there's a real value in preserving what you have going on this season and just, you know, maybe supplementing it a little bit, nothing too sexy.
If we were a couple weeks ago and Isaac was mired in his terrible slump, you could have talked me into it a little bit more, but like, again, like, you're kind of just giving Isaac, who can shoot a little bit better and pass a lot worse and defend worse, but not a lot worse, because Reddish is a great defender in his own right, and just that size. I just think, like,
when we were in person watching Cam Reddish, like, both of us were really on board with it, because at the time we didn't know if Laurie at the three was going to work. In fact, we were both against it.
Like,
we were pretty sure it wasn't going to work. We did not know what the situation was going to be with Kevin Love, like, embracing kind of that first big off the bench kind of role, and he's done that. So now that you're in a situation where you kind of have a little bit more of a sample size, we're almost reaching the halfway point of the season, I would be really, really cautious in figuring out exactly who I'm adding to the locker room. Like, this is not a indictment on Cam Reddish. I know actually nothing about him off the court. I know nothing about him in the locker room. I'm talking about someone that's going to expect minutes and a role and looking to earn a paycheck coming up in this contract year, right? Like, there's a lot of factors that go into that. And right now you have such an environment where everybody's sacrificing, everyone's trying to make the right play and you know, contribute to the collective. You got to be careful, and I really do think it would need to be a value plus for me to consider moving on or making any sort of drastic move this year.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I just think, like, you just got to be careful with the kind of vibes that you're creating, because this team is, as we've noted, more than the sum of their parts right now. Mm-hmm. And anyone who messes with that very, very delicate chemistry should be brought in with great care.
Yeah, and I don't think it's as simple as saying, like, even if it was an opportunity to move Kevin Love, like, I don't think it's as simple as saying, oh, we're moving him for someone that's 32, so you're moving vet for vet, so you still have, you know, like, a veteran presence in the locker room. No, it's not that simple. Like, Kevin Love has a track record of this, so I do think that I have confidence that Kobe's going to show discretion, right? Like, it's
a great
job putting this together, but... Yeah.
If nothing else, it's a great test. It's a, you know, hey, you have found a mix of players that are doing great work for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's a team that seems to like each other. You have prioritized a certain type of player in your kind of acquisition models.
Yeah.
Like, how much do you really believe in what you've done, and how willing are you to, like, keep pushing versus letting things grow? Because the reality is, as much as we, you know, because the counter is, I think both of us would be pretty thrilled with very, very minor moves at most.
Mm-hmm.
The counter, of course, is, you know, every time you have a team this young, there's everyone says, oh, you got 4 or 5 years with these guys. And it just so rarely is the case.
Yeah.
You know, like these windows are shorter than we think they are. And like, if you are of the opinion that this team is pretty darn close, then yeah, it makes sense. Go crazy. But yep. I just don't think that the pieces are there to make the kind of trade that makes it worth it. So it's like, is it really worth trading legitimate draft capital for Cam Reddish? Maybe it is, but then you got to pay him. They're already perilously close. I just think they're just going to, everything matters more. Like we've yeah. always said this, collecting assets is the easiest part of being a GM. It mm-hmm. just is. Spending yeah. assets is the hardest.
Yeah, it really is. And when you already have a product as good as the Cavs have, like I think it buys you the luxury of time. Like you can take a little more time to figure this stuff out and be cautious with it. It's not a situation like the Mavericks where you feel like you have an accelerated timeline with Luka. You don't have any other pieces with him, so you take a swing for Porzingis, right? So hopefully... I would expect them to use discretion here. I would expect Kobe at this point, we can have some confidence in him, right? Like the roster yeah. building has been very good. This will be a very interesting week. I guess the next podcast will be on Monday as there is a back-to-back on Saturday, Sunday. Carter, you're abandoning me again, aren't you?
I'm going on another work trip. So yeah, I'm going to miss the next one, but then I'll be back through the end of the year, as far as I know.
Hurting my feelings, man. Absolutely hurting my feelings. You will be missed. But we got an interesting stretch of games. Houston Rockets on Wednesday, a few days off before a back-to-back against Milwaukee and Atlanta. Obvious standings implications there. Let's keep our fingers crossed with this COVID situation. The whole Omicron thing, not the most fun. If I can be honest, it's messing with my mentals a little bit, but you know what? We're not doctors here, so let's keep our fingers crossed that everything works out there. So thank you to everyone that's tuning in on YouTube. Make sure you like and subscribe. Click that notification bell so you know when we're going live. If you're listening via on podcast, you can support us by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, and help cook those books. If you want to be part of the Chasedown's exclusive Discord chat, you can send a screenshot of that review to chasedownpod@gmail.com. However you choose to support us, we really do appreciate it. Make sure you guys are staying safe out there, and until next time, go Cavs.